I think we should be we should rename this podcast from the RE of Marketing to Not the Footballer.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. Today we've got a fabulous gentleman named Paul Int, a.k.a. at Biz Paul, as you'll probably know him.
Not the Paul Ince, the footballer.
Not the Paul. Actually, that's his 15 minutes, I reckon, from the Screwfix advert. If you remember back to the World Cup days when we were allowed in the same stadium, there was a Screwfix advert where they had people named of famous footballers just doing their day-to-day life, and he was the Paul Ince. Not that this is a video show, but polar opposite of actual Paul Ince.
I think we should be we should rename this podcast from the RE of Marketing to Not the Footballer.
Yeah, that's two now, aren't you?
I think, yeah. In season one, I think we referred to Michael Owen quite often. We've had Michael Owen on this.
Not that one.
Yeah, but not that one.
Actually, live workshopping people of the listeners. We should call it Not That One.
Not that one.
That's very catchy. What do you write in the comments or tweet us what name you prefer? Not the footballer one, not that one, or the traditional RE of Marketing podcast. I imagine it won't be the one we've actually called it.
Probably not.
If I would vote, I would go not that one, because it's a bit odd.
That gives us a really hard content series going forward, though, which is finding people with a name related to something else.
Yeah, that is tricky.
Well, we could just interview you, because you're a wrestler, aren't you, in America?
Oh, MMA fighter.
UFC MMA fighter.
Technically, yeah, UFC fighter. I'm the, if you're a UFC fan, I'm the one with my name and I look a bit Amish. Don't tell him that if you know him. As an MMA guy. Danger zones already in the podcast. But we've known Paul Ince for a bit in real life, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. I mean, you've known Paul longer than I have, but I've worked with Paul for a couple of years or so. I was introduced to him by yourself through Powwow, I think.
Wow, yes, Powwow. So me and Paul ran events together, one of which he runs much more successfully now. But we've kind of collaborated and worked together and been creative buddies for a while. And he's a good man. He's very knowledgeable. Today we're going to talk and cover about a few of the topics, actually, in our way that we've spoken about already. So one of Paul's hats is that he's an agency owner. And if you remember right into season one, we spoke about the future of agencies and kind of redefine them a little bit. Paul is also runs events and communities, and we've spoken about the power of community and connection, and he facilitates a bunch of workshops like I do, of which we have highlighted in season one that facilitation is definitely a skill people need going forward, especially as we record this. It's the 5th or 6th of October, I can't remember exactly, but it's early October, yeah. 2020. And it's now looking like next year is very close. 12 weeks, 2 days, in fact, I looked it up, until 2021.
That means 10 weeks and 2 days, I turn 40.
That's not bad. I've been 40 for, you know, one year. But it's very close, right? And I think the end of COVID is doesn't feel in sight. I don't have masses of insight into it, but it doesn't feel like it's anywhere near returning to massive in-life gatherings of people like we were used to last year. So who knows? So I think facilitation is one of those skills is kind of here to stay, I imagine. Unfortunately, I think not unfortunately, because it's a great
thing. It's a good thing, isn't it? Facilitation's a good thing that marketing should be doing, as we discussed in series one. I we should be doing more of it. So I'm one of the good things that's come out of COVID, of which, you know, COVID's a horrible situation for everybody to be in, especially with families and friends and worried about, you know, livelihoods and things like that. But actually allowing people to become better in things and becoming a facilitator in marketing is one of the upsides of it.
It is definitely. And I'm conscious for the first two seasons of this, we've spoken about COVID, but it's a big thing, right? We've referred to COVID times, and I imagine by the time this comes out, early December, it won't be out of date, unfortunately.
It's going to be a good couple of years, isn't it? But even if they found a vaccine later this year or early next year, it's going to take time to roll that out. So there's always going to be a risk of COVID for the next 18 to 24 months. And that's even if they do find a vaccine that quick. So it's just something we're going to have to learn to live with.
We've said it before as well, but the lessons we've learnt during this time, like facilitation, like remote work, like the doing away of meetings, probably, or how to work and project manage remotely, and all those other skills that come with whatever job you guys do, are good ones, right? Regardless of whether they were in your job before, I think they're all valid skills for the 21st century.
Yeah,
if I'm honest. So I'll look forward to Paul Ince's conversation that will join us shortly, and we'll catch you on the other side. We've got Steve and Rick. Steve, Rick.
Hello.
Who was doing something else because, you know, we're pros at this podcast situation. And Mr. Paul Ince in the house. Hello, Paul.
Hi there.
Hi there. So, as we said in the intro, Paul, that me and Steve both know you IRL, as the kids say, in real life. And we've had the pleasure to kind of both work together and collaborate and be actual pub buddies at some point in the past. And we're here today and we're going to talk about a few topics that we've covered in previous episodes of our podcast that are relevant to your corner of the creative world. Mainly agencies, but we'll probably also get onto the power of events and communities, because as we discussed in the intro, we don't know when the end of this COVID thing is, and events are a big part of the most affected arena of that, and it'd be interesting to speak about that. And you're also what we frame as a facilitator of workshops. You have those skills of joining the dots and stuff like that. So we want to cover those things. So let's kick off with, why don't you tell us a little bit about your agency and your agency background?
Okay. So I am the MD of Like Mind Media. We're do we call it a boutique agency, perhaps? That's kind of the trendy thing to say. A small, it just means small, doesn't it? A small agency based in Loughborough, normally, that specialise in lead generation, really, through creating content. That's how we pitch it.
That's good. And you've been, how long have you run LightMind? It's been a while, right? All since I've known you.
About 5 years. It started off as something else, but we don't talk about that because that was a dark time.
good. Yeah. We won't go into that until the end then.
That sounded very, very elusive, Paul.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to wait and see if I tell you.
Elusive is fine. Move on, next question.
We all have experience in that we don't share on the podcast. Sometimes I share mine, but that just gets edited out, I think. I think it does. I don't listen back, so who knows? But anyway, so agency world. So Steve? Must have been episode 1 or 2, right? When we talked about the role of marketing and agencies and stuff.
Episode 1, I think it was.
Episode 1. We reframed what marketing kind of means, because it's one of those words that has a lot of baggage, right? And people like who we serve, like people, other leadership groups, other companies, other marketers even define it differently. And agencies are a big part of that. Like, some are super specialists that just do AdWords, for example, right? And some are super general that try and do, I think the house is in-house agents where it's like everything in-house, right? And some are kind of a hybrid, that they're kind of good at loads of stuff, or good enough at loads of stuff, but like you put the lead generation at the point of the spear. Now, what do you think the kind of role of, or the difference in the market between specialist agencies and generic agencies is? Is there a room for both? Do you see any trends where people are becoming more specialist or more general? What's the feeling in that world, do you reckon?
Are we talking pre-COVID or current COVID?
What's the difference between pre and post-COVID?
Yeah. Well, I think, and this is just an observation really, I suppose, that I think pre-COVID, I think there was definitely at least two types of agency. I think there was what I would call I don't want to call it traditional, because I don't think traditional is quite the right word, but a very structured agency where they might call themselves full service agency or something like that, where you've got the team doing everything potentially, and the account directors or whatever go and work with the client and then come back and then work out what the strategy is, and then they will implement it and deliver that, and there you go, full service agency, they do everything. And then there would be specific niche or skilled based agencies as well that were looking at, I don't know, maybe they did like pay-per-click or things like that, maybe a social media agency that specialized in one discipline. But then I think there's sort of different facets to it as well, because I think pre-COVID, you would definitely see a lot more niching. You know, we are agencies for the hospitality sector. Oops, you've got no business anymore. And that is, I think, the difference between pre-COVID and post-COVID, is that perhaps, whereas a lot of people would talk about niches and the importance of niching and all this kind of stuff, that maybe we're seeing a bit of a move towards, maybe we should niche, or maybe we should expand what it is that we're doing.
Yeah. I think there's...
Do you think we're becoming more generalised, going back to more generalised approach, moving away from niche? But I hear a lot of chatter across social media where people are saying you've got to niche because of COVID. How do you feel about that?
As in, people are saying you've got to niche to survive?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, I don't believe that at all.
You don't?
I really don't. I think we haven't niched. I mean, I suppose we've niched in a certain way insofar as we've got a proposition that talks about lead generation. But I don't think it's particularly niche. It's more of that proposition type of thing. But I think if before, those agencies that niched into a particular sector, and where that sector has been particularly exposed to the downturn and lockdown and all that kind of stuff, I've seen people really scrabbling to survive for their agency. Like I say, if they were focused on retail and hospitality, I know people that have not had work for 6 months, or their entire teams have gone on furlough for 6 months, and the majority of them still are, and they don't know what to do about that because they don't have the breadth to survive. It's just suddenly they're so exposed that just from a business perspective, it seems tricky to carry on the way they were. So I'm glad that we didn't niche, because that was something that was suggested to us.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, Mike, because I thought there's for a while now. I thought there was a gap. So if we look at the agency world, right, the market of marketing, for example, right, I always thought there was, or have started to notice, a bit of a gap opening up in the agency space, right, a wider chasm. So on the left-hand side of the chasm, or the lower side of the chasm, there's a bunch of agencies who maybe have the business model of kind of trying to sell a number of retainers of doing a thing for some money, right? Like just doing marketing stuff, marketing output for money, right? Activity for money, rather than on the other side of the chasm, like a true good creative strategic agency, whether that's specialist but has a better depth of service that is focused on either projects or impact driven stuff that I want to say a better quality of client, but that might not be the side of it, because I still think there's businesses out there, let's ignore COVID for a little bit maybe, but smaller businesses out there that just want to outsource it because they haven't got the time or inclination to do marketing themselves and don't see the perceived value of putting any more effort or time or energy or money towards it. Whereas the companies who know or understand the true value of what good marketing and good brand and good like design could do would pay for this other side of the agencies. And there used to be a closer gap. You used to have good people in the stuff for money side of the agencies, the number of client-based business model. But now I think it's harder for that sort of agencies to make the change to the big, impactful, creative stuff. And there just seems to be a wider gap. Is that something you have recognised or see?
I'm not sure particularly, but that might just be my experience. I think what we are seeing is, as maybe organizations try and rein in their spend because of the recession or downturn or whatever we want to call it, that people are questioning more what is being delivered for them. So are they buying the service, are they buying an outcome, and which of those is now more important? And I think from what I've seen, people are going, well, just delivering a service where we need to be right now, we need outcomes. So if you're able to deliver outcomes, then that's better for us. And I think what that means is that the organizations are reviewing what they're spending. And if they're spending a lot of money with big agencies and don't feel that they're getting a return on that, then that's what causes them to question what they're doing and then to look at other things. And I think the opportunity there is for smaller agencies, maybe a niche agency, someone who's a bit more agile to come in and say, well, this is how we do it and this is what's different and this is what the outcome's going to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think that reminds me of a comment that's been wanging around the marketing press since the beginning of COVID time, is the articles that there's loads of marketing people going, this is the time to spend on marketing and up your brand and take advantage of market share because everybody else is stopping comms and activity and things like that. So you've got chance to increase your share of voice in the market, for example, your share of awareness in the market, which reminds me of what you just said, reminds me of that point, for example. And another one that I've seen a lot of organizations, people we in marketing would call clients, right, unbundling their departments. So I know three or four that have made a majority of their marketing department like redundant or had to let them go, unfortunately, who will now go to an agency on a project basis rather than a employment of full term basis. And I think that's they are both kind of things that will continue to happen. I think
the thing is, we're almost going through, people are going through the grief cycle, aren't we? But you know, when COVID hit, there was a shit the bed moment. What's going to happen next week, next month? Oh great, the government helping with furlough. But what's actually happened now is people have had what I refer to as the catch the breath moment. They've been able to sit back, they've been able to catch their breath and go, right, this isn't going to disappear. What can we do now to grow again quickly without putting all our eggs in one basket? And actually that's where the agency model really fits well for marketers, because they're not having to put all eggs in one basket in recruiting into their own departments, but they've realised that they've now got to have those messages going out, and they've got to have comms going out, and they've got to get people on side to retain their business going forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think what's been really interesting over the last 6 months is all of the different things that have happened. You know, you could almost put coronavirus in a box and say this is something that happened, and the strategy around that means that, okay, maybe we've got to change our messaging, or maybe we've got to cut this campaign or change this or whatever. But then other things have happened as well, right? So throw Black Lives Matter, George Floyd in there as well, and suddenly you've got this whole issue about race and what is your company doing about race and diversity and inclusivity, and how are you dealing with that? What are you saying? Can you back it up? And so that came into the mix as well. And so I do think that that's where this is, can need to call on maybe some expertise that an agency offers in a way that maybe an in-house group of people don't, even if it's that just one little bit, say, how do we talk about this? And there was a lot of people saying, how do we talk about diversity? How do we talk about what's happening, and needing to get specific advice on that? So all these different things, I think you're right. I think people have gone, okay, well, the value of maybe bringing in an agency for this project or this particular element gives us some flexibility and some agility that we wouldn't necessarily have, because we can do it on this project and then it's done and they can be gone. I mean, I would say definitely we are doing more project-based work now than what we have done before, in terms of like retainers and stuff like that. Things seem to be coming through on projects.
How do you keep up to date with it all, Paul? You know, when like the Black Lives Matter stuff with George Floyd, it probably wasn't in your arsenal beforehand to be able to talk in the way that you talk about it now, I would have thought. But so how do you go about learning that as an agency for your customers who are inquiring about it?
Well, I think this is just my view, and maybe I'm not the one to judge it, but on that particular issue of diversity and inclusivity, I think personally that we're where we need to be, and maybe a bit ahead of some, just because of previous work that we've done. So I think that's fortunate. I would be behind the curve on other issues. So the same principle of your question can be applied. For me, it's about really paying attention and listening. I think listening is a big part of what marketers should do more of, because it's one thing to say, okay, we're all going to have these fantastic ideas and aren't we clever and creative and coming up with these brilliant campaigns, but what's going on? What's going on? You have to listen. And I think even just on the coronavirus issue, okay, here's an even better example. I mean, Boris Johnson, when he went into the hospital, whether you like him or not, there was a more somber tone, a more somber mood to go, well, this is big. He could die. What does that mean? And how, you know, you don't want to have like your campaign launch in the next day going, way, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So I think marketers really have to listen to what's going on in terms of news, society, culture, all of the different areas, not just the areas that they're focused on or what their clients are focused on. Because as we've seen with George Floyd or with Boris Johnson, maybe Trump, who knows, things could change very, very quickly. And I'm big on agility at the moment, and whether it's agencies or brands or whatever, needing to be agile and being able to react much quicker than they've probably ever had to do before.
would you say that agencies in general are more agile though, aren't they, by right, you know?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, because there's usually fewer barriers to progress, I think. So you haven't got the barrier of, is this a good idea or not? Because everyone's kind of in that zone where they'll just go maybe with an idea and try and work it through until something's ready to present to somebody. With a brand, there are things to sign off and spend and people to convince that aren't working in the industry and things like that. So I think naturally marketing agencies are more agile. But I think depending on the agency and the structure of the agency would depend on how that gets positioned. I know agencies that are personally, I think, stuck in the dark age. They're not interested in their people learning. The managing director, CEO's got a flash car and everyone else is on minimum wage or whatever it is. I think there's different types of agency there. But yeah, I do think agencies in general are naturally more agile.
I think it comes, that links nicely into something we mentioned in the first part of this, right? The word facilitation, right? And me and Steve have discussed this a few times and in another interview with somebody, and it's like you need that skill of facilitation to be agile, right? That's the result. The result of agility means that you've got a person or people or persons within your organization that are good at facilitation, because facilitation is a creative skill, right? It's the ability to step back and see the whole situation where if you're an agency, the client may be just worried about doing this thing, right? Might be a bit blinkered about the situation. And the ability to creatively connect dots, as we've framed it, right? Those facets of facilitation make an agency agile or an organization agile or not, or a marketing department, as me and Steve reframed in the first episode, because we were looking at the different kind of sets of marketing or types of marketer. Like there's some people who are reactive, like they will go, we need this marketing stuff done, can you do it, like a reactive marketing. And some people who are marketers that are forward thinking or proactive, you know, or always planning for the next thing. We discussed that as a role in internal departments and agencies, and I think both of them have a place in organizations. I'm sure Steve will agree as well, but they need to, with that in case, they need to be connected by somebody. Somebody needs to have that middle skill, right? And I think as we know you in real life, I think you have that ability to see stuff that other people don't, to connect the dots. What do you think about facilitation in the role?
Well, I think that's very kind of you to say so. I don't know. I'm not sure I'm overly conscious of it, to be fair. But I do think that you've got to sometimes pull together different parts to what's going on. So what is the mood, or what is the trend, seeing as with working with multiple brands or multiple businesses in multiple industries? What do we know about the technology that's being used? What do we know about audiences and how they are reacting to these kind of things? And then what does the brand stand for? What are their things that they're involved in? What do they believe? How does that marry up? I was actually talking to somebody not so long ago about Generation Z and what they like, what they want. And this idea that they are really keen on values and justice, and want to be involved in a decision making process by a brand before they buy into it. Okay, but they're still buying from Boohoo, who are like making clothes for a pittance in modern slave factories in Leicester. So how does that marry up? I think there's lots of conflicting stuff that a marketing agency or a facilitator probably needs to bring together to find where that fits and where it goes?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think it comes down to understanding customer needs, because some stuff like Boohoo, for example, could be framed under a convenience need, because you can just order it online from your city, right? And it comes to your house the next day with a decent delivery, right? So it could be framed as convenience need. Whereas if they have the space and time mentally to make a decision about out of a choice of brands and don't have an immediate need, maybe they will make a more conscientious choice. I think that goes for not just Generation Z, right? Like most people. But I think that's a big part of it, because understanding customer, right, and their needs and their times and their position in the buying cycle and stuff like that also adds into the whole bunch of stuff around the values of the company, like, you know, all the external macro environmental effects. Just change tack a little bit into a word you've come up with a couple of times, which is diversity, right? And we've recently, haven't we, Steve, spoken to a girl that you know, Fleurie Forbes Martin,
yeah,
I've never met her before that podcast, and she's pretty epic. She's done some stuff, hasn't she, Steve?
Yeah, she's pretty cool. She worked at an agency for quite a while. Sorry if you think my background's changed, by the way, for those, I know we're on a podcast.
No.
I had to move room quickly. Anyway, Fleurie worked at an agency. She did some great work at that agency, but actually she just wanted to follow her passions. And she actually had a real passion around veganism and not eating meat. And it centered down this rabbit, not a rabbit hole, but it sent her down a new life path where she found an agency that stood by her values at the same time. So not just around veganism, but now she's looking into all things around climate change and around Black Lives Matter and diversity and inclusion. And she will now only take on projects inside that company that resonate with her own beliefs.
I think that's... That's like the point. I think that was it. Like I always considered myself like pretty aware and pretty unprejudiced and stuff until the recent things, and it's a stage of unlearning, because I'm part of the institutions, right, and the organisations and the society that is systemically undiverse, right, whether I like it or not. And I didn't think that affected me, but recent times has been. Like it obviously has, right? But you start to think deeper about it. And I know you, Paul, from Marketed Live, which is a conference Paul's run, has always been interested in at least the lineups being as diverse as possible. So you've always been, that was, a few years ago, right? It's been 2 or 3 years now that's been an important state of diversity. And I think it's a tricky place for a lot of marketers to delve into and delve into properly. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I live in Leicester, which is quite a diverse place, and I think one of the things that the last 4 years actually, because I'm gonna pull in the Brexit vote into this conversation slightly. Because we're one of the only few places, I think, to really vote Remain. But what since then, I can what I've realised is that actually I live in my little diversity bubble, like in my diverse bubble. I mean, it's not perfect, Leicester, but you know, we all celebrate Diwali. It's very ethnically diverse. Other faiths and cultures are all celebrated together and learned about at school. And my kids have friends from different backgrounds, and it's all very normal. And then stuff happens and you realize, no, that's not normal. So I'm sort of in a way guilty of being not prejudiced, because that's not the right word, but almost excluding what it's like for people not in that scenario, which, and their experience is different. So I think that's probably a good thing to recognize as well. So in a way, I kind of feel like it's easy for me to like wang on about diversity because of my experience. At the same time, I'm a white male, and so I have a certain amount of privilege that will naturally prevent me from seeing things from other people's perspectives anyway, in to a certain extent. But it's not necessarily, I think, about trying to get a diverse lineup on an event. I think it's really, for me, about voice and voices and representation, and thinking about, well, we as marketers serve communities, and in those, you know, who is the audience and who's in that audience, and is any company at representing the diverse nature of a particular audience? You know, if you're selling kosher products to Jewish people, you need to remember that not all Jewish people are white. So even within different groups, there, you know, this is for everybody, diversity. Neurodiversity is a thing that I'm only really just discovering in terms of how that can possibly be represented in marketing or in events and things like that. How do you represent that? We see orientation now in mainstream drama, in adverts. You know, there's all sorts of things. It's not just about race. There's all sorts of different areas where we need to be thinking about diversity and who we actually market to and who we're trying to sell to.
And it's, you know, it's you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's, I don't do a great deal of client work. I don't run an agency or anything, but I think being aware of all the possible implications of a company, because we're marketers' jobs, right? It's how we've got a job. It's the work I do to give other companies and other people and other brands a voice, right? To put their voice into the world. That's what marketers' job is, right? To help themselves. So it's something that came up with Fleury's interview, is that do we have a responsibility as marketers to make sure that voice and that message is right? Is it our responsibility to do that?
Yeah, the question is it our responsibility as marketers to educate others on those issues?
And I would say to choose, you know, like if there's a diversity or inclusion or some kind of issue, like whatever it could be with the message that disagrees with us, the marketer, us, the agency's value, is it our job to challenge that to our clients or, you know, back away? Mm-hmm. What do you think to that?
I think that's a question. I mean, I think on principle, I would probably say it's our responsibility as human beings to be cognizant of what the issues are and to educate others if we feel that there is something that they are missing or lacking. But I think it's quite idealistic to say that. I think the reality is that if when you add a commercial element to it, and you know, it's a choice of putting food on your table or not, I can totally understand that some people might say, well, I don't want to rock the boat at this point, and I need to do the work. It depends if they're saying, it depends what their views are, I guess, as well as to how you feel about it. But I don't think
there are some companies that always jump on that. I don't want to say bandwagon, because it's not a bandwagon. That's the wrong term to use. But when you look at some of those companies that year on year use the pride flag, for example, on some of their products, when actually they've got no internal setup to deliver anything on that agenda, they actually don't support that agenda outwardly at any other time in the year. They're just doing it because they think they should be doing it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good example, actually, Steve, because that's a good example of can jump on a bandwagon. And I think, like anything, it is really about backing up what it is that you say. If you're going to change your logo into a rainbow, well, that's nice, but how are you supporting your LGBT staff members? What services or products are you offering for your LGBT customers? Are you contributing in some way to the promotion of diversity in that area? Or what are you doing? And it does come down now to this, like, what are you actually doing about it? I know in the States, brands are really being called out on, well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So replace the pride flag with, Blackout Tuesday that happened in June, a day which was supposed to be marked by music companies or people, and just got hijacked by everybody to put a black square on your Instagram. I mean, great. What does that do? Nothing. Not really in terms of contributing it to it, but I think
solidarity in a way, though, didn't it? Even if, because it went so viral as a black square on Instagram, even if people weren't going to take action out the back end of it, it did show some form of solidarity. And for me, actually, it kept the conversation going, which is really important, because there's often these flashpoints in life with things like Black Lives Matter or Brexit votes, whatever it is. There's this one flashpoint where something happens, and it's about how long you can keep the conversation going afterwards to make the change and not let it just peter out.
Sure, but I think the issue with something like Blackout Tuesday was it's something that's so easy to do that it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
very true. Someone felt assuaged by, I've put my black square on, that's my bit done.
Yeah.
And actually, people need to feel much more uncomfortable about things like that, to say, well, no, it's not just about a black square. If it makes you think, great, what is your next action?
What's the next step? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your next action? Yeah.
Completely. Yeah. And I think that applies to brands as well. I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with changing your logo to a pride flag. Or any other cause, but I think you've got to mean it. You've got to show that you mean it.
We've had this conversation on a couple of big brands before who have done things where you just know that deep down that they don't mean it. They're just doing it to try and gain further brand awareness. And that infuriates me. And I think the biggest change that's happened in any form of marketing over the past 5 to 10 years is, we went through this whole purpose-driven marketing piece, and it's actually moved on from purpose now. It's still there very much so in purpose marketing, but it's about the principles in how you achieve your purpose is the most important thing.
It's up to us as a society, I think, to almost police it and to be able to call things out and to say, well, that's not right. What about this? We mentioned Boohoo and modern slavery. They did get called out for that, and rightly so. Big news item, big issue. Let's see whether things change or not. Last night we had Pure Gym under the cosh.
Yeah.
A post on Facebook by a PT in Luton comparing his workout to slavery. Well, not a great idea.
No.
And it was rightly trending because everyone's going, this is outrageous. So I do think, actually, marketers aren't perfect decisions. And I think it is interesting how audiences feel able now, and again, I think this is right, to push back on things that they don't like.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, last night I finished watching the Kevin Hart documentary on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it. But if you remember, Kevin Hart was going to host the Oscars about 3-4 years ago, and he got pulled at the last minute. And it's because somebody found a tweet from his from 10 years ago, which was all about if he found out his son was homosexual and what he would do. But the community called it out and actually stopped him from being the Oscar. I mean, that's the power that people have. if working as a movement together, that is a power that we can have. And that's huge. And, you know, in marketing, we've got to remember that at all times.
I think that's quite an interesting idea, that maybe in marketing or brands or an agency, whoever's working on it, can harness that power. Because I think that's where some of the influence comes from. So it's not necessarily about hunting people down and finding a tweet from 10 years of their career, but thinking about how people can harness the power of the community's voice for a cause or a principle that you as a business share. That's quite interesting.
I think that it adds to a wider thing that's been in the press for a bit, if I'm honest, like the move to, whether it's younger generations or like consumers or society as a whole, of them having the power now, right? And not having, like, believing what they believe and associating brands with that value or that offer or that proposition or that impact, not the other way around, not seeing, you know, like it's a wider switch that's always been that the power is in the customer's hand. The brands that we work for and that we own and that we run don't mean anything to anybody unless you attach meaning to it, right? It's that we don't own that. What is it? What's the phrase? See, that we don't own the brands that we did this in the rebranding episode. We don't own the brands that it's in the hands of the customer.
It's something more succinct than that, but I can't remember it off the top of my head.
But it's that feeling that, do you know what? Like that we can only. I think Matt Davis says it all, right? As somebody who we've referred to as all, like, it's our jobs as the companies and the marketers and the brand people and the facilitators to manage the meaning attached to our company. That's all we can do, is try and manage the meaning, right? The meaning is given to us by the people. All we can do is try and hope that's the same one that we want it to be, or similar, because it can, like the Pure Gym instance, right? It can change in a flick of a switch, so to speak, or a hit of a keypad, maybe.
But there's lots of examples that anyway, isn't there? It's like you know, Patagonia, right? Now I'm not like big into hiking, right? But from what I know, Patagonia was not set up to be this like on-trend fashion brand.
No,
but is very, very popular and very, very on trend. And that's the community, isn't it? That's people assigning a value to that brand for, I don't know, what reason. I mean, I suppose in the case of Patagonia, it's about their earth credentials and all that kind of stuff, because they espouse those. But loads of things, you think, where did that come from? Why is that suddenly so popular? Well, the community, right?
The community, yeah. So it must have, like, every episode of our podcast, Steve, comes back round to purpose. Don't matter where we start it, doesn't it? It seems to have that circle effect. The moral of every story that we tell on here is that having some depth to your proposition, to your business, to your brand, to your marketing, like something behind it, is super important, right? To have so people can attach the right meaning to our logo, our products and our services. It's funny how it always comes round to that again, isn't it?
I think, but to me, that's why I love marketing. I've marketing for the tactical stuff. I find that infuriating quite often. Good marketing is all about putting across the message that is core to your belief system, your value, what you want people to believe in, and continually putting that across. And if you haven't got that core element there, then what is the point?
It's a very good point. It's a very good point. That point is a very good point. So I think we've come to a logical end of the cast, right, gentlemen?
I'm happy that it's all about purpose.
I'm happy that it's all about purpose.
I don't like purpose. I'm just going to go back on everything that I've said.
it's the misunderstanding and misinterpretation of purpose that I think is the issue, along with a bunch of stuff in our trade, right? And we've discussed this a lot, that people misunderstand and misuse a bunch of words in our trade, and purpose is one of them. Right? We've got, it's just
to agencies in a way. I do think that purpose is quite a difficult thing, and I think it's harder for an agency to grasp purpose if you're working with different businesses, because if you're in a business, you sort of live and breathe the company. And as an external person, that's quite hard to come in and work out what that is, because you've got to take that from what you see in a very short amount of time. And not everybody can articulate what that purpose is, which again, I suppose goes back to facilitation and maybe trying to draw that out of people. But I think it is harder for an agency to understand that. No, it's certainly not impossible. It just maybe takes a bit longer. And I think the good agencies find ways to almost assimilate themselves with the companies that they work for, with their clients, to be part of that company themselves. Yep. And so they can start to live and breathe that.
Yeah. I was listening to a really good podcast the other week. It's a new marketing podcast that was started up in COVID, like us. I can't remember the name of it for life of me, and I'm phone in another room, so I apologize. But they were talking about the differences in marketing between agency side and client side. And I'd never really thought about it, because I've always worked client side. I've never been agency side as such. But it's a really good point that you make, Paul. You know, when you're client side, you are enthralled in that company and the purpose of what it's trying to achieve. So it's a very clear vision of where you're trying to get to, where as an agency, to come in and try and understand that, there's got to be that familiarization time to be able to understand where that customer's trying to get to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does take time. It does take time. And I think it's quite interesting, because I think a lot of businesses would want to make a quick judgment on whether the agency is any good. And that would probably be based on tactics,
yes,
rather than anything else, until a point where the agency feels part of the business, when it's then based on maybe something else, or a connection, or end results, or outcomes, or whatever.
There's probably an element of trust to be earned by agencies, because I know, you know, I'm one of the people who have both client and agency side experience, right? So I'm lucky enough to have seen both of those worlds, and there can be a great deal of churn when agencies or freelancers are used, because somebody will come with a different point of view, a different worldview, and a different perspective to respond to a brief the client's made. But if the client doesn't make a good brief or add, or for example, to use a very crude example, if a client comes and goes, right, I want a Facebook ad campaign to do this thing, right? An agency can go, we can do Facebook ad campaign, and you quote to Facebook ad campaigns, but don't ask why they think they need a Facebook ad campaign, right? And then what's the message, what's the depth behind it? You can have a really good marketing business just responding to briefs, can you make me a Facebook ad campaign for this thing, right? It's not marketer's fault, but is it? Like how deep do you dive into that situation? I think that, you know, maybe it's marketers, maybe it's the people like us who to give people a voice. It's our job, like Steve said earlier, to teach or to educate our clients on what a good brief is, you know, or what should go, what we need to do to be able to do properly good marketing is a bunch of this other stuff. Right. Don't worry about briefing us about Facebook ads. We know how to do that. Right? We need to know the other stuff.
Yeah, 100%. I think because that's the difficult bit. Like you say, I can create a Facebook ad, or my team could create a Facebook ad campaign, and we can base it on that. This is the size of the audience, because That's just numbers. This is how many people will hit if you spend this amount. This is what that we can put on, the call to action to put on. But why? So yeah. So I think there is something there about needing to educate a client as to what makes a good brief and how do we get the most. How do you get the most out of an agency to begin with? What's the sort of precursor to engaging with that agency, perhaps?
Yeah, and like even more than that, do you have a person in an agency or agencies that you trust enough to involve earlier in the process? But not just going, right, we need to do this action that we figured out internally without any external influence, right? Let's get three quotes for agencies, right? Do you have... There's a role for the creative.
You know, from working client side, there, I've worked at multiple companies, but there'll only ever probably be a key set of three or four companies who I would work with in my work lifetime. All those companies will follow me from company to company. All those agencies will come and work because I trust what they do. I trust that they're going to get the best out of what I'm looking to achieve. But I also trust their judgment as well. And that's the bit where the relationship has got to work on agency to client is it's not just a we need this, it's the agency saying, no, you don't need that, you need this. And when that happens, you know that you've got that agency relationship right.
Good point, I think. That's it. I can see that having happened itself. Like I use, like in when I do client work, which is mainly workshop, not actual doing the stuff, like I pick from people I trust, nothing to do with, like I have no intention of sending out work to random agents, although they're probably fine. Like I do it, it's all about the personal relationship, right?
They're probably brilliant at what they do, but actually it's going to take 3, 4, 6 months to start to understand how that agency work. It's going to take another 3 or 4 months on top of that to start seeing real outputs come in. Whereas you've got that relationship with somebody who you already know that you've used for multiple years, is delivered time after time. They walk in the door, the difference is going to be made from day one, not from 6 months in, which is as you said earlier, Paul, you know, you go into a lot of companies and they might want to see an outcome within 2 months. And if there isn't an outcome in 2 months, they're going, well, why are we using that agency?
Yeah, and to be honest, that's what a lot of companies do.
Yeah.
Because they just, I mean, again, thinking about COVID and stuff like that, when budgets are tight and the pressure's on and they've got to report up the food chain to the board and all this kind of stuff as to what the outcomes are, what's easy for them? Well, it's this many hits on the website and this many people seeing our campaign and all that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, it's conversions and stuff and all that kind of business as well, but it's what's happening now because the pressure's on the whole brand building, the purpose, the building of audience. It arguably takes too long, but I actually think it takes quite a brave company to go down this road of purpose and what we're trying to do and what's the long game here and where are we and what do we want in 5 years or 10 years, our legacy to be. I think that's quite brave because it's long and hard and doesn't necessarily generate results quickly. So I think those sorts of companies that are willing to do that are really interesting to work with. And actually probably the most rewarding type of businesses to work with as well.
Yeah. I think there's been
because actually, I completely agree. The problem is with those metrics, as you mentioned earlier, is that lowest common denominator of information that everybody understands, has a shared understanding on. So your board member will know about how many clicks on a website means, as will an administrator in marketing, as will a CEO of the company. It's that one denominator where it's very hard to measure purposeful impact in a month or two. It's going to come 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the line. It's not going to be there next week.
And it's work, right? Like, I was just on a webinar with, again, Matt Davis, one of the Brand Up webinars that was doing it. It was the guy who runs Go Dine, Adam Roberts, I think his name was. And he's just done a project with, again, a guy we both know, Ross Davis from Strafe Creative, which is Open Kitchens, which has been a CIC, I think, that they've set up over COVID times to help A, the hospitality industry and people who are in food poverty, like generally. I think we've discussed it before anyway, but he was saying that his Go Dine and this Open Kitchens has been an amazing project, but it's been work, right? It's work to fulfill a purpose. Like, it's more work than running his existing company that is a very successful company on paper, right? He says, but this has been like, it's a work. He's been doing 130 hour weeks. Like, he's had to pull in resources from all over the place because he's on a bigger mission. It's difficult to fulfill a long-term brand building thing, to fulfill a purpose. It's difficult, right? It's a bunch of work. And it's not for everybody. But, you know, we know, like Mark Ritson has written about it, and Field and Burnett has done the long and short of it, right? You can't build long-term brand value and purpose-driven value without successful short-term sales activations, right? It's not possible. Nobody can go, I'm all right doing stuff for 10 years. I don't need any results in 10. You won't make it. Do you know what I mean? You need the long and the short of it. I mean, you need to, like, if you're lucky enough to work with brands with a purpose, right? It's going to be a long, hard piece of work to make an impact into that, right? It just is. And that's why it's not for everybody. Do you know what I mean? It's not something that every company should have, maybe even. Do you know, I think it's super difficult. It's a difficult piece of work to face. Definitely. And as a, you know, an outsourced marketer, how do you maintain a retainer relationship for a 10-year, 25-year goal based on, well, you've told me your goal is this. Right.
If, I think most agents in the country would like a 10 to 25 year retainer.
Yeah.
They don't happen. Right? they don't happen, do they? You know what I mean? It's again why marketing is such a difficult job, because you have to juggle quick short-term results and long-term value building, where all the money is in the long term. Do you know? Like, it's super difficult situation as marketers are in, I think.
Yeah, why would you ever want to start a job in marketing?
Don't come to marketing. But good. So any final comments then, folks? Mr. Ince, any knowledge bombs to leave us with?
I don't know. I think we live in a very precarious moment, actually, in society, where there are so many factors that could pull things one way or the other. Some offer hope and some do not. And our job, I suppose, as marketers is to pay attention to that and to try and understand it and interpret it. But we're not the saviors of society. It's not a marketing person's job to help shape how society feels. That's it. So, you know, no one's a miracle worker, but we do have influence. And I think taking that influence seriously as a responsibility is important. And we should always remember that.
I love that. That's a great statement to end with. Mr. Rick, anything to end with?
No, that what Paul just said absolutely nails it. You know, I've been thinking in marketing terms for the last 6 months or so. You know, actually, if we can help give the information to the younger generation now to be able to make those changes, then that's where we should be spending time and effort. give information to everybody to make their own informed choices, but try and help that younger generation because they're the ones who are more open to the changes that need to be made for this world, not just, you know, COVID wise and Brexit and all these different, we're in such polar opposites, no matter which side of the fence you're on, right or left, you're not right or wrong, you know, where you are in one of my minds, but you should be have all the information to go make your own choice. But that younger generation now is the generation of where we have most influence as marketers.
Yeah, I think Steve, you're right, and Paul, you're right, and those younger people will have to live in the world that our idea, our actions now create, and that's good luck with that. All right, well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next time.
Well, that got a bit deep. Got a bit deeper than where I thought we were just going to talk about agencies. I'm really glad that we got into the subjects that we did. But, yeah.
I agree, right? And like we said at the end of the podcast, it's funny how no matter what the topic of the podcast, we always end up in a similar place, right? In a thing, in trying to rethink and reframe and redefine what meaningful marketing is, right? And why it's important, like in whatever context. In today's conversation with Paul was in regards to agency client relationships and the whole troublesome stuff that comes with that, right? And before it's been on brand with Michael Owen and stuff like that, but it's the same. It feels the same to me. Do you know, yeah.
Everything comes back to a bigger thing, doesn't it? It's not just a delivery tactic. Everything comes back to this bigger reason, which is, you know, it's the same thing with Fleury. She spoke about a very similar thing, and Josh was the same as well. Yeah, no, talking around human-centered design, it's about a bigger thing that we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And then even with Steve, you know, when we talked about what Cooper Parry was wanting to become, it wasn't about what it needed to do tomorrow. It's great that a lot of us, what we're finding out as marketers and what we've believed in, you and I as marketers over the past, no matter how long, is there are a lot of other people out there who agree with that thought process of purpose is more important than anything else. And that now principles is just as important to hit that purpose.
Yeah. It's, I suppose that's what was, I don't know, unwittingly, but with our title of the re of marketing, the rethinking, the rediscussion, the remarking on stuff, right? It was maybe never born to be a useful, practical, tactical marketing podcast. Yeah. Where everything we've done, everything conversation we've had has been about the essence of why marketing is important and marketers are important and the way that we think and the work we should do and the impact we should make, even if it's to our little base of clients, right? It's putting a dent in our little world, to use Steve Jobs's famous phrase, right? It's about helping people out there who may be focused on tactical things to maybe just have a chance to listen to a different point of view, right? To people
tactical,
who
the tactical's always got to happen. It's always got to happen at the end. But imagine the difference if you were a tactical marketer. Imagine the difference you could make if you understood the purpose that you was trying to achieve with that tactic. Imagine you might just do your tactically, you might do your tactic a little bit differently. You might put it to a different type of audience. You might do it through a different channel. You might look at doing it through different forms of content, because actually following a purpose can help achieve greater things.
Yeah, it's like we can all do, you know, whether you're purpose driven or whether you're just trying to flog some product, you can all do an Instagram post.
Yeah.
Right. It's the meaning behind the message on that post.
Yeah.
that is the important thing. And I think that's seems to be the lesson from the first two seasons so far.
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving the interviews, though.
It definitely is good. I reckon if you people out there are listening to this, have a recommendation who we should chat to, because we only know people who we know, right?
Yeah.
Right? If there's somebody super interesting that you would like to get the Tim and Steve treatment of oddest, long-winded interview style ever, then please let us know who that is, because we would love to know.
Yeah, if you really want to piss somebody off, nominate them for this podcast.
Yeah. Who do you hate? Put them on this podcast. Not really. Hate's a strong word. And one would go one of them. But, you know, but please feel free to recommend either yourselves or others or bosses or whatever. I think there's, you know, everybody in our industry or in an industry has something valuable to teach, and we'll do our best to get it out of them.
Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome. Right. I'll see you next time, Stephen. And everybody else, subscribe.
Subscribe, like, sponsorship, all of that.
Excellent, excellent ending. We'll sales pitch nailed.